So we're so back here for a Monday
so
brunch.
So many amps and such attitude. It's, you know what I call it? It's amptitude.
Amptitude.
A lot of amptitude.
I like that.
Add a tamps.
Add a tamps.
I don't like that as much. We are here on a Monday morning. You just heard last week, you heard our review of Pee-wee's Big Adventure with Gareth Reynolds. We got him back here. He actually came back. He left for a couple days, did some dates, came back and did another episode.
It's good to see you guys again.
We just want to dive back into this. If you don't know Gareth Reynolds, you have to look up his stuff. It's incredible. Sean was just saying that his newest stand-up special, which is called Whiskey... Or no,
England, weed, and the rest, right?
Yes.
Or weed, England, and the rest.
Whiskey, weed, and England.
Whiskey, guy, ginger man?
It's called Whiskey, guy.
Andrew Santino.
Yeah.
England, weed, and the rest, yeah.
But you can find that on YouTube, right?
Yeah. I recorded that, almost 2 years ago, really. So it's been a while.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have so many questions to ask you about stand-up stuff, but I do want to tell people the first time we met you.
Okay.
So we met Bert Kreischer. We went out and did Bert Cast.
Yep.
And then Bert kept in touch with us and said, hey, I'm coming to Cedar Rapids. We're doing a big show at an arena there. Why don't I come on your show and we'll do a review of Caddyshack.
Yep.
So we sat in our studio and he said, you coming to the show? Fuck yeah, we bought tickets. He goes, you know, here's some backstage passes. We were so pumped. We brought our wives and, earlier that day, we saw on Instagram how one of the comedians that was coming along with Bert on this tour forgot his luggage.
Oh, yeah.
In the Uber. Dude, tell the story about that.
It's fucking crazy. Especially because I'm such a homebody, but I have to leave a lot. And so, I really do try to bring so much stuff with me. Crazy. I'm like, I gotta have the right floss and my lotions, you know, not to sound like a pervy like massage, but I'm like, my creams.
I gotta have my Thursday shirt.
Well, I have sensitive skin, so I'm like, I gotta be careful, otherwise my skin gets... So all this shit, anyway. So my buddy Steve Fury is going on the road with Bert, too. I find out it's he and I, and I'm like, I have all these questions. I'm like, well, do you have a hotel? He's like, no, you stay on the bus. All this stuff. So he's answering all my questions, and he's like, you leave from this kind of little private side airport at LAX, which is kind of like
FBOs or whatever, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like where a successful person will leave. And so it's like everything else, where I'm like fully a socialist, and then I'm like,
here.
But when I'm in up front, I don't hate it. And so you go to this little room, and whatever. So I have and I know Bert a little bit. I don't know him a lot.
This was your first time going out on the road with him,
yeah. And also, you know, he was very nice to have me on his podcast to promote my special, Whiskey Man and the Guy.
Nice.
Super good.
And it's so good. Thank you, guys.
Cool.
Google that. And so basically I was like, okay, well, I'm going to drive my car to the place where I always drive it to and park for, a few days. But I had some anxiety because I was like, oh shit, you know, I whatever.
That's pretty intense.
It's intense.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right. So I was like, well, what I'm going to do is I had a little time to kill. So I went to CVS. I bought two of those mini cans of Pringles and I bought a little thing, a little white wine or red wine bottles.
Because they're not going to serve it on the plane. No.
No. And have you ever flown?
An emergency stash of your creams.
Yeah, my cream stashes. And so I'm in my car and I'm I'll take a lift over to the place. And so whatever, I'm just in my car eating Pringles, drinking wine like a loser, never thinking it would be an important part of a story. Then my buddy's like, hey man, you close? We're probably going to leave soon. And I'm like, oh shit, okay. So I get the lift, right? I take the lift over to this private little airport. There's a little line to get in. And I say to the lift driver, I'm like, you don't need to go through the gate. I'll just, whatever, walk in. He's like, okay, whatever. So I get out, I go to the little room and Bert's there, and all his people are there, and we're all hanging out, and we're having a drink.
Really early too, isn't it?
What do you mean?
No, it was late night, right?
Well, it's like seven-ish, eight-ish, something like that. So we're drinking, and you know he's the best. He's like, take anything that's in this room, literally, anything that's not nailed down, take it. So I'm like, okay, great. Little do I know, going to be valuable pinches I'm having, and then you go through a little, you know, it's time to go, so you go through a little private X-ray thing. It's such bullshit, you know what I mean? They're like, oh, valid ID? You go to the plane.
Congratulations.
So you got to put your bag through the machine, all that stuff. So I'm, put my bag through, whatever. Get to the SUV that's waiting to take us on the tarmac to the plane. And as we're there, I'm like, oh, I say to the woman who's like our lovely liaison, I go, hey, I left my bag in the fucking little x-ray thing. And she goes, oh, okay. She runs over. She's checking. She comes back. She goes, it's not there. I go, it's in the room. And as I'm saying it's in the room, I'm like, is it in the room? Because I don't fully remember putting it in the room.
Oh, no.
And as she's coming out, it's all kind of dawning on me that I think I just left it in the back, the trunk of the lift that took me there.
Oh, no.
And so I'm just like, did I? And it was like I'd had a couple little wines, and I was ready to go, and I didn't want to be late. So I was kind of in a rush. So I say, like, as we're there, I'm like, I left my fucking suitcase in the lift. And nobody can believe it, because it is unbelievable. It's also, like, my first time meeting Bert's crew. So they're all like, so you're bringing, like, simple folk on the road now? You know, and I'm like, I am a man. I am ready to hang out. And I call the lift. The lift driver's like, oh, yeah, it's still here. And I'm like, well, enjoy the week with it, because I'll be back in 5 days for it. And then basically, yeah, we're like going, and Bert is losing. Everyone's losing his mind.
That's where we saw the Instagram video.
Bert's like blowing it up. And then the next day I have to go to Target to get tons of shit. And he is like such a lovely man, but I'm like getting ready to go to Target, and he's like, where are you going? And I'm like, Target? He's like, I want to go to Target. I'm like, oh, what? I'm
why?
Like, okay.
Why?
Because he's like, yeah. Love the new shit. Yeah, no, and he just like goes to Target. So we go to Target. He's like, just buying everything. And he's like, he's dressing. He's like, I'll buy that for you if you wear that on stage. I'm like, okay. And but then, so yeah, so I left. And then it was the funniest feeling when I got back to that airport. The Lyft driver had over the week dropped off my stuff. So it was right waiting. So I had someone run it out to me. And when I got home, it was the funniest feeling to unpack a fully packed case. It was like almost like, yeah, it was like a time capsule. I was like, wow. Oh, these
I used to wear these, but I don't anymore.
Look at my Q-tips.
I remember packing that.
Yeah. Mm.
All the creams like I could have used.
All of it just going back on the shelf. Just like.
Dude. And so we were sitting, we were like up in this, well, I guess we were kind of separate, but we were up in this balcony. And I remember knowing the story, and I've never heard of you. I've never seen you.
But now I
like your special whiskey guy, Mile Man.
All right, thanks, bro.
All right, he's back in the good, bud.
I get it.
But you walk out, and I remember Bert was in Target going, I told him I'd buy him anything he wants, but he has to wear it. Or anything,
yeah.
I'll buy it, but he's got to wear it. And you're the first one out, and you walk out in this giant orange like snowsuit. I was like, oh fuck yes. And right away you go, well, elephant in the room here. And I was like, I fucking love this guy. And dude, your set was so awesome.
Oh,
it was
wow.
like it was my intro to your whiskey man guy.
Yeah.
I heard a lot of the jokes from that. Yeah. No, dude, it was so awesome. Then having a couple drinks backstage, it was great to meet you then. And
it's so funny to even think that those sets go well, because you're doing 15 minutes, which is, you know, pretty short if you're like used to doing stand-up, you know, headlining sets. It's in a fucking like place where the sporting events take place.
8,000 people there.
Yeah. The laughs are in the bigger a venue gets, even in just some big club rooms, you kind of at times can't tell how you're doing. And I'm like, oh, I'm doing all right. And then you see Bert go, and you're like, well, now he's definitely doing well. And I would say, I didn't have that energy going with the crowd. But it is. It's just like the craziest experience. And even when you're beyond nerves when it comes to stand-up, which to some extent, you know, for the most part I am. Like, I get anxious over little things. But for the most part, like, you know, I'll go do a show. I don't think twice about it. But it is strange when you're like, well, this is 10,000 people, and then obviously it's a little bit of...
Was that the most you'd been in front of at that point? So you literally walked out onto stage in front of the most people you've ever been in front of in not your own clothes after a very traumatic experience.
Yes.
Yeah, I walked out and killed it.
Well, I walked out in a crate, like in a Missy Elliott, like Hype Williams outfit.
Do you still have that?
I have the jacket. The funny part was it was like four sizes too big.
It looked good.
So it was like I had to like, I don't even remember what I put. I think I put my regular belt around the pants. So it was like, even then I was like, well, I can't keep this for too long.
Was it worth it? Let me search it. Can you throw your thing down, flip it, and reverse it? Would you mind? Or?
I wish I could reverse the trip, to be honest with you. Gone back to the airport and got in my bag.
That's so freaking great, man.
Yeah,
so
it was crazy.
I was going to say, so I'll spoil this for Bert, just to let you know how his thought process on this. So he comes and he ends up doing the show with Caddyshack and everything. And like
earlier that morning before this show.
And I've got like a clothing company, and I said, oh hey, I brought some clothes. Like it's like the Midwest mom in me to just be like, oh, somebody needs some clothes.
Yeah.
So like I brought some clothes, and they literally said, no, bring them to the show because we don't want to give them to them yet.
No. Peter was like, no. We're going to Target after.
We want
to
wait on this
fucking asshole.
We got him something to wear. Okay, but I did want to say, still from my car
thank you.
Got some clothes for you.
You know that you, I mean, you did pick up your luggage today at the airport when you arrived.
Could have come in handy at another time.
I didn't know if you were still
my bag.
Oh, no.
Oh, shit.
It's my thing. Rush over to this podcast.
I didn't know if you were still down on your
luck. He's the comedian who always forgets his luggage.
Yeah.
It's in your new special, whiskey.
Yeah, oopsie luggage whiskey.
That's a great fucking name.
Oopsie luggage whiskey.
It sounds like an Irish song. Like, oopsie luggage whiskey.
And that's why they always say the thing. Oopsie luggage whiskey.
Hey,
I think I asked you that. You were born and raised in the U.S.?
Yeah, I was raised in Wisconsin.
But your parents are from like
English
England,
immigrants.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about that. Like,
no.
Okay. Cool.
They moved to Ohio with my brother when he was 7, and then they had me when I was 0, and in Wisconsin, and it was there you go.
You got it.
Yes. Do you need a t-shirt?
No. Yeah. You can wipe my mouth.
It was super weird. I mean, I grew up with like English parents in Wisconsin, and it was super bizarre. And my mother still lives in England. And
really?
Yeah, my dad still lives in Wisconsin. Hmm. Spoiler.
Oh, no.
It didn't work out. It's okay. I need the shirt now. it was totally fucking weird. But it like definitely gave me a weird perspective. And I mean, that's kind of like part of what England Weed and the Rest is about, is a little bit of just like, it's like, weird. You know, you grow up how you grow up. You never think like, this is unique. But as I got older, I was like, that was really weird.
Yeah.
It was really weird. I was incubated by total British culture. And then I was kind of let out into Brown Deer, Wisconsin as a little English boy. It was super kind of culture shocky.
That sort of juxtaposition has got to be pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was weird. Yeah. And now I love it because now I'm like,
that's the best.
I like have like my Wisconsin part, but then I'm very rooted in England as well, you know.
How often do you go back to England?
I go back probably about once a year.
Do you ever do stand-up up there?
I did actually. The last time I was there, I did a run of shows.
Sweet.
And it was like varying degrees of success, but some were fucking great.
Yeah.
The for some reason, the worst shows I'll ever do are in front of my English family. So, like, you know, I'm like, you know, obviously like hustling my career, but there are times where I'm like, man, this is going well. And then whenever I go there, it's always like lowest turnout, worst audience, gets into my head, and I have a bad show. And like the last time I was there, it was like, you know, there were some venues that, sold pretty good for like someone who never toured England before, and then like the one where my family comes to,
it's
like seriously like 28 people.
Just your family.
Yeah,
and
I'm like going, I start the show, and I'm like, they make you take weird little breaks because we did a dollop tour in the UK, and the reason why Dave doesn't want to go back is because we had to be like halfway through the show, be like, we'll be right back.
Really?
Yeah,
just for like
weird
to get drinks and go to
get
the bathroom.
Drinks, yeah,
tea
and
breaks.
So you have to either pay a liquor tax or do it. So whatever. So in the first, I had to do 15 minutes, and then I had to take a break. That was like the rule. I'm like,
really?
Whatever. Yeah. So in the first 15 minutes, I'm like, I'll just do crowd work. So I'm like going around the crowd. And I'm talking to these two women up front, and the one of them is just like, well, yeah, because I've not broken up with my boyfriend and all that. And I'm like, oh, okay, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then the one goes, well, she's like, fancies you. And I'm like, oh, cool, whatever. And she goes, and she's had you. And I'm like, what's going on? And it was the woman I lost my virginity to in England. And so talk of, like, you're prepared for pretty much everything.
Except for that one.
You know what I mean? But I was like, Ruth? I was like, holy fuck. And it was like, everyone was like, this is shocking, right? And I was like, it is confirmed shocking. And then I went backstage for 10 minutes while I was like, what just happened?
What do I do now? Yeah. You had to sit and ruminate on that, like that she's just out there waiting.
My mother and her sister came back to eat like the free pizza that I'd gotten them, and they're just sitting there eating, and I'm like, what you... What the fuck? What?
So you... That... Yeah. Ruth, huh?
So that was Ruth. Ruth. Huh? That's the Ruth you shagged. Ooh, it's good pizza. It's good.
Oh my God. Speaking of the dollop and all your shows you do, you've been doing the dollop for a long time.
Almost 10 years.
Almost 10 years. Wow. How did that start?
It's really weird. I basically met Dave through other podcasts. Didn't know him really well. I knew he had another podcast that was fairly successful. And I basically just like, it's so out of my comfort zone to like, ask people for shit. Yeah. But like a friend of mine was like, ask him to like guest host his podcast one day. So I was like, Mr. Anthony, I'd love to like guest host your podcast one day. And he was like, no, you're on the list, you know. And it was probably 2 years later that he was like, hey, my co-host is out of town, come do it. So I did one. And, you know, I definitely was like, I mean, you never really know where your own career's at, but I definitely had nothing. So I knew that. I had, like, nothing going on.
Had you done any podcasting before that?
Yeah, I'd met Dave on this podcast I was doing with my buddy Sam Tripoli.
Gotcha.
So, like, it was his show. Yeah. It was called The Naughty Show. It was, like, really kind of, like, filthy shit. I love Sam, but it was, like, going into his world. And then this one was much more, like, conversational. I definitely had the energy of someone who's like, I want to crush this show.
Yeah.
And crushed it. And then so Dave had me back again, did pretty well again. And then I thought I was going into guest host for a third time, but he was like, no, we're going to do this new one. And his idea was basically to rotate a comedian and read them a crazy story from American history. Mm. And we just did it so well together that, you know, he was like, let's do it again. Let's and then we just kind of kept it rolling. So So I really like met him through. There are a couple relationships I have like this where it's like, you know the person from doing podcasts more than anything. For the first year or 2 years, like, I knew Dave a little bit, but it was mainly he was just, like, my teacher. And then it was, like, when we finally went on tour together, I started to get to know him better.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just really random and crazy. And one of those things, too, that it was, like, you know, I'd been playing the game in Hollywood of, like, try to get on this or try to get your leg, you know, all that other stuff. And then this just kind of, it just blew up. It really quickly.
That was
just
your first real big.
Yeah,
like,
it was
thing
like suddenly
hit.
I was like, oh, something's happened. Like more followers and more attention. And I remember going to the Podfest, which was this LA pod, and like having people be like, oh, I know who you are. And I'm going, what the fuck? Like, I told my brother, my brother and I were going to go shoot pool at this bar. And I was like, or we can go to this place where like I'm like famous, you know. And he was like, well, "Let's go there." I was like, "Super weird. Come on over." And he was there. He was like,
I'll tell you if you're famous. Let's go.
Yeah. So it was like a trip. Like,
it's a no-brainer for me to picture you being a guest on a show and then just taking over it because, like, dude, you're so quick with everything. Like every comment you made on our last episode was just like the funniest thing ever, and just like like
now, truly like I. The only other person that I could see that is that fast in my whole lifetime of watching anything funny is Conan O'Brien. Extremely comparable to him. Like it's crazy how fast it is. It's just like,
well, it's very nice. I relish the opportunity always to, it's really weird. When I started doing more crowd work in my stand up was when I started going like, okay, there's like something fucking weird here where I am able to do that. You know, sort of what we were talking about. We were talking about like growing up watching those movies and stuff. Because my parents had a really strange existence and marriage, so much of my childhood was like I escaped into entertainment.
Yeah.
I just like watched TV or I watched stand ups. And it was really the only thing I wanted to do was comedy.
When you said your brother was, what, 12 years
older? 12 years older,
That's a gap. You basically don't even have a brother.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I tell him all the fucking time. I do not have... But it was. It became very, like, a real pleasure as podcasting kind of unfolded to be like... Because I would do, like, improv And friends of mine would be like, you're good at improv, but like off stage, you're so fucking funny. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? And I was like, well, there's no version of reality where that's a job. Hank, keep dreaming. You know?
Rubbing
and then,
it in.
Yeah. And then like,
show podcast, us your butt.
Yeah. The podcast kind of became a thing. I was like, well, shit, man, I can just talk endlessly.
So. Isn't that wild that like, you, I mean, like your career is just talking and doing stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, even when I like, you know, it's almost not frustrating, but it's interesting in a way where it's like, I will go write all these things and like try to perform, be like, I've perfected them. And people are like, man, when you were that dick, like when you were pretending to be a dick on the dot. And I'm like, yes, that was, I don't remember it, but I wrote a lot of stuff.
Thanks.
You know? This is my art. Yeah. It was off the cuff.
Yeah. Oh.
You really do have like a night, like TV show host, like cadence, I think in a lot of what you do. And I envy that a lot, but I also it makes me wonder, do you get more out of like podcasting or stand up, or is it equal parts, you know, push and pull? Like what do you really feel like is, you know, where you land?
I mean, I love podcasting. I mean, I love it just from, you know, how simple. I mean, I love the dollop because I know there's a path. Like even we're here to help. What's great about both of the shows is it's not like, it's not just like sitting around just going like, you know, so what else? Like they have structure to them.
Yeah.
And the structure gives you the ability to go, oh, I can go fucking bonkers in this. And if it fails, we still have the structure. So I love that. And, you know, podcasts have given me the audience. There is something also, I love doing stand-up. I love, like, I mean, because I was a writer before I started doing podcasts. Like, I was, you know, mainly writing on TV shows and shit. And so I got very used to kind of scripting comedy. And like I'm saying, when I would, you know, watch Nick at Night as a kid, it was like, you know, paying attention to those tropes, those dialogue tropes. And so I love the writing of stand-up. I love being able to go like, oh, that, listening to it, my own shit, and going, that would be better there. Or this is better here. Or a new idea, and you get to take it in front of an audience. Yes. Or crowd work, you know, doing crowd work with a crowd and like really fucking murdering that. There's something about performing in front of a live audience that to me is like, you kind of just can't beat it. Podcasts give me the ability to reach people to try to get them to come to see my shows. But stand-up's much more of a grind for me than podcasting. Yeah. Like, there's definitely, like, I mean, there's shows that do well, and then there's shows where I'm like, do I have to go? Like, they will be mad? Because it seems like nobody should be upset if this doesn't happen.
You sure?
They're thinking how to get out of it now.
Are you sure they know I'm coming?
I'll pay them $200 to let me not go. But it does. It gives you the ability to really, like, be in front of a crowd, and I think that energy is the most addictive form of performing for me. You know?
You just nailed it. We did our second live podcast we've ever done in four years. We did it last weekend, and it's doing the podcast is great because you release it and people go, oh, that was really fun.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay, cool. I'm glad you liked it. But then when we did it in front of the crowd, the laughs were coming at us while we were telling the jokes.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
This is immediate wild. Response.
Yeah. Immediate response. Is this good or bad?
Yeah.
And you know right away.
It's an energy feed.
It's nuts.
Like it just something about it just fuels your fire. It's like gasoline on a fire. And, you know, sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad. But, you know, if you, I think I've learned that you can take it too far. Like, you know, you got to let a joke just finish up and stuff.
I refuse to believe that.
Really?
No.
Really?
No. So that's rule number one.
Are you sure?
That's where the editor comes in.
but like, that's the thing. It's like, you kind of learn almost, it's great to feel it and learn it almost in real time, and like what hits in real time and like what doesn't. And then like, something about being able to do like our live shows, I think is as much, it's maybe some of the most rewarding stuff we get to do.
Are you going to do more of them?
Yeah, we'd love to.
Yeah, you should.
We'd like to. What we realized is that in Iowa, where we're from, in Cedar Rapids, we don't have that technically that many fans. Like, our fans are nationwide.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when we do it at home, it's mostly just like our families and some people that travel in from out of state. But we know that it's amazing.
I'm sure you guys know how to follow your metrics and go to the cities where, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, I drive a fucking passenger van.
Yeah,
sure.
Like, you should just do that and do it with like five shows or something.
It sounds fucking great to me. Like, in all honesty, like, because we've all been musicians, we've all done some touring, we've all been in the van with like six, seven guys.
Oh, yeah.
But there's something to some people that is like, what the fuck? Why you put yourself through that?
Yeah,
like
on
you,
purpose?
You did that to yourself. But I think all of us, we can't wait for that to be a thing, you know.
I think because I kind of like, maybe to my benefit, like got started with my own career as far as like performing, like, you know, when I was like over 30, I have such gratitude to be able to do it that like when we go do a live dollop show, like it's never lost on me how fucking lucky I am to be doing what I do.
It's crazy.
Even if it's like, even if you maybe like the getting there and the, I mean, even when I was telling you guys about this tour, like I, you know, I've tried to avoid COVID like the plague and getting it and then having to like postpone a bunch of shit and all that stuff. When the second that you are on stage, yep. I'm like always grateful for the experience and always aware of the fact that people are there. They don't give a fuck. Like if nobody's there, they don't give a fuck if it's sold out. You got to try to give them a good show. Even I remember doing one of the shows in the UK, and I was in a city called Brighton, and I was up there for an hour 15, and I asked the guy who ran it, I was like, "Can I get another glass of red wine?" The red wine never came, and he told me after because he was like, "I wasn't sure when you were gonna stop." He was like, "You had to stop the show at some point." He's like, "I thought if I gave you another red wine, you'd do another half hour." He's like, most Americans who come over, they do like 35 minutes and then they'll do like a Q&A. I was up there for like an hour 20, just like,
you were waiting for your glass of wine.
I was. When I said that, I was like, you were smart to not give me that red wine. In my head, I was like, I'll do another 30. What the fuck?
I'm destroying right now.
2 hours. Yeah, exactly.
Where are we at? We're like 25 minutes in. So I thought, just bring another red wine. I'm done.
Yeah. Well, speaking of our metrics, I know Chicago is a really big city for us, and so is a bunch of Madison areas. And you're going to be April 3rd in Madison, April 5th, West Bend, Wisconsin, April 6th, two shows in Chicago at the Bend Theater. Like, to anybody out there listening, like, go see Gareth. It's fucking worth your time.
Please. We're coming tomorrow night.
Oh, great.
A couple of us will be there. Yeah.
I will be rusty. That is the good news.
Are you going to make any COVID jokes or conversations?
I don't know. The only joke I could think about with COVID was the amount of people asking me how I got it. And I was like, you know, one of the fuckers about COVID is you're not really able to pinpoint that. Like, people were like,
I think it was this door.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know. Really? I was like, yeah, no fucking clue.
It's tough for me personally to trace back to patient zero. I'm sorry. Like, I don't know.
But I don't know. I probably not, just because it was like, the only thing that was funny for me was how I tried to beat it for so long. Yes. And when I got it, I was like, no. I really felt fucking disappointed, because
it's like you fell off the wagon or something like that. You know?
It really,
you left your guard down.
Like, I fucking masked on plane. I definitely am like the person where people are like, oh, you're still buddy, are you okay? Like, I was on that level of trying to fucking beat it. And then when I finally got it, it was like, even my mother, because my mother's in town right now, because you know, she was going to take care of my cat for a minute because my life is really good. And so my mother was going to look after my cat because I'm a grown man in my 40s. And when I called her, she was out to dinner with my brother and his wife. And I go, well, like, I got COVID. And she goes, oh, no. And I just was mad. I could just hear the people around her like, what? Oh, God, what? She goes, Goffy got COVID. And I was like, thank you.
How did it happen?
Yeah. Do you have any idea how this happened?
They're writing a card.
Like, a man ain't a bat.
Oh, my God. But now the best part as a man who has had COVID, I think, twice now is there's about a week to 2 weeks, 3 weeks where you feel like you can do it. Like, spit in my face. Go for it. I love it. Let's go.
I know.
Dare you.
Super immunity.
Well, and if I wasn't on tour, like, where I just feel I just do pay such attention to my health.
Oh, yeah.
And energy level. I don't really drink that much when I go on the road. Otherwise, I would totally be like, it's fucking good. You know what I mean? Like, because I really do avoid shit. I was saying to Luke, like, because Luke lives with me, and like, I was like, well, I'm probably gonna get a little crazy, and he's like, you're probably gonna get a little crazy. I'm like, gonna be walking around in like a hazmat suit, like, how is everyone doing tonight? Where are you from? Who have you been in contact with? Yeah. Get him out. Don, get him out. Out, Don.
Luke comes in and grabs him.
Luke, grab him.
Understand you because it's through the hazmat suit. Yeah. Where are you from?
Just, I have like the back of the mic sprays the powder on people. That's awesome.
Thank you for coming down.
Where'd you guys come from? Oh, downtown Chicago. It's like, I just want to get rid of you right now.
Have you been neutralized? That's not a joke. Stop laughing at some of these. They're not premises.
I am very serious right now.
Neutralized. Just rooting
people, out of your crowd just so you can thin it out.
Like, Well, even in my special, like, I asked people to wear masks and the front couple rows, and like, you know, people were just like, well, fuck. Like, people are so mad about it.
Where'd you film with that?
I filmed it in Portland at this club called Helium, which is the fucking greatest. And my original plan was to shoot, because I called it England, Weed, and the Rest. So I was going to shoot 20 minutes on England, because that is how it's structured, 20 minutes on weed, and then just 20 minutes kind of hodgepodge. And I was going to do that 20 minutes in one city, that 20 minutes in another city, that 20 minutes in another city. And as we were watching it, we're like, this Portland show is just so fucking good.
Yeah,
it's the best. We were like, the other shows are not as good. And it was like, well, I would love my premise, but it's also like, let's just go with the best fucking show. But I had, so people were wearing masks in the front couple rows. Man, people were just like, people still get pissed about it.
Oh, yeah.
It is what it is.
Man.
Yeah, it's
actually, weirdly enough, we're coming up. We're rounding the bend of 4 years.
I know.
I mean, like early March is when I had a gig in Los Angeles for a private party on March 3rd, 2020. They called us the morning of March 3rd and said, we're canceling the conference. And we're like, what?
I know.
And yeah.
Well, actually, Bert was the last live guest on the Dollop before the break. And he had a world tour. And Dave, who I do the Dollop with, that guy's like, he's a psycho.
Yeah.
I mean, he will be like, he'll just be like, so here's what's going to happen. We'll be like, what? And he was like, COVID's going to shut the world down. And I was like, because it was unfathomable.
Yeah.
And so Bert's backstage and Bert's like, Dave's like, so we're going to promote your world tour that's not happening? And he goes, what? And he's like, it's not happening. He goes, it'll happen. And he goes, it's not going to happen. And he was like, yes, it will. And he's like, it will not.
Wow.
And Tom Hanks had just gotten it. Like, it was like that phase. No. We were like, well, Tom Hanks is dead.
Well, Tom Hanks got it.
Time
so we're
to live
shutting down
Philadelphia real life. Yeah. And
try to run away from that for us.
Sorry. Yeah. and then it did. It fucking fully shut down.
Did Bert ever tell you that story of how he had the special that was coming out on St. Patrick's Day of 2020? It's the best story I've ever heard him tell. He said that he was doing he was airing this. The special was going to hit Netflix on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
But he was going to do a show at like the Comedy Store, and all these comedians were coming in.
And the world gets
shut down on like the 14th. But Norm Macdonald was one of them, and he said Norm Macdonald called him on the 16th. Was like, hey Bert, what time are we meeting at the show?
So, hey Bert,
full well knowing the world said that.
What time are we gonna be meeting there tomorrow?
And then he got a call the next afternoon, being like, hey, I'm at the store. Where are you?
Are we still doing this thing?
Hey Bert, I'm at the Comedy Store. We're gonna do the show for you.
that was four freaking years ago.
It's fucking nuts, man. But performing in that time is also fucking insane. But you
make do. I mean, you just go, well, yeah, okay, fine. Like, I'll do it, but you need to wear a mask in the front row. Okay,
well,
fine,
whatever. I stopped. I mean, I eventually was like, clubs were like, dude, stop. And I was like, okay. I mean, but the truth is that the daylight that people who see the whole thing differently for me, the points they made, I was like, those are legit. People would be like, well, why can you take it down to eat? And I was be like, that's a fair fucking point. Like, even on planes, they'd be like, well, you could drink with it off. I'd be like, you're right. You know, they were like, well, you can't wear a cloth that doesn't do anything. I was like, you are like, there was no... It's so funny to live in a country that the government really does basically abandon the citizens in every way, kind of watch everyone try to process it, and you're like, there just should be a place to tell, and there fucking was, and even they were like, we don't do our job anymore either. But like the thread had been pulled with the FDA. It was like, so wait, we can have arsenic in our beef? Like everything was fucking stupid for so long. So when this came along, it just kind of was a heightened extension of the stupidity and the failures that surround us. But I think America in many ways is, we came from the Wild West and we plan to return to it. And like, it is just very interesting to watch. And it's very interesting to go on the road and go to different places. Yes. Yeah. I went into this bodega in Austin with a mask on, and the fucking guy, this guy goes, whoa. he goes, what the fuck is that? And I go, I didn't have COVID, but I was like, this seemed to be the only thing I could say to people in Texas that would make, I go, I have COVID. And he goes, COVID's fake, dude. And I was like, wow, this guy is awesome at whatever this game is. This guy's, yeah, I was like, you've done your fucking homework.
He's playing top cards away.
I was like, I've got a good second serve. And he was like, I have a handgun.
You know what?
I'll leave.
You don't really know how to play tennis.
It's true, though. They like, the government was just like, yeah, you should probably stay inside. And do what? I don't know. You should just probably stay inside.
Well, as well as like, if fucking people, it's so funny because when I had COVID, I watched so much history shit. It's like, and when I was watching this stuff on FDR, like during the Great Depression, they were basically like, there's three ways we're going to get out of this and it's incremental. One of them started was give people some fucking money. Yeah, give people money. And like, so they got that part kind of right at the beginning because they were like, everyone
$600.
Everyone stay home. And here's some money. And everyone's like, well, that's not bad. And then they were like, now stay home.
Forever.
But no money.
No money.
And everyone's like, well, we need to make fucking money. And they're like, no, don't go. You can't work. But no more money. And you're like, well, what the fuck?
You don't need money. Just don't do things that require money.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, you have these fucking assholes like eating ice cream like on James Corden being like, this ice cream company delivers to your house. It's like, lady, we don't have fucking money. As Gavin Newsom is like going out to restaurants eating without a mask when he's like, you have to wear a mask. And then he's like, hey, what can I say? God. I'm embarrassed. And you're just like, bro, this, who the fuck is in literally, who are we supposed to listen to? Because you're just like fucking liars. It's like when my friend's mom was like, don't smoke pot. And we found her pot and sex toys. Yes. Like, what the fuck?
Okay.
You got Groucho Marx dick glasses and you're telling me how to live? I get there's an age difference, but come on.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Well, dude, honestly, we don't want to keep you, man. You just flew in today. I know you're tired. It's been awesome having you, man.
Oh, well, thank you guys. For
and
real.
Please, really everybody, GarethReynolds.com. There's a bunch of tour dates up there. Anybody out there that listens to us, like, you're going to love Gareth. Check out the specials. Whiskey Man, Boogaloo. Yep.
I honestly have
Oopsie
COVID
Luggage right Whiskey.
Oopsie Luggage Whiskey.
Luggage Whiskey is
listen to all those. Listen to all the podcasts, man. Thanks for coming.
Hey,
dude.
Thank you guys.
Thanks,
appreciate you so much.
Appreciate you, man.
Thank you.
Hey guys, I'm Maggie Lawson.
And I'm her podcast partner in crime, Timothy Ombudson.
And we are the hosts of your new favorite show, The Psychologists Are In. Each week, we go episode by episode talking about our favorite moments from psych, sharing behind-the-scenes stories, incredible memories, and even have drop-ins from our best friends and fellow cast and crew. If this sounds up your alley, listen to The Psychologists Are In on the iHeart app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.